Good morning.
You awake?
Nope, I didn't think so. That's okay. Grab your Bibles. If you don't have them, like I said, share with the person next to you, introduce yourselves. If you think they're cute, maybe share with somebody else. Matthew chapter 8. He's standing behind a tree and he's looking at this playground, and on this playground is this 5-year-old girl. There's a look in his eyes. It doesn't seem like he's just a guy at the park watching. It seems like he knows this girl, and he does. See, that's his daughter, and she's on the swings, and she's playing on the swings going back and forth, but he just stays behind the tree. She'll get off the swing, and she'll jump on the slide, and she'll go head first and land straight in the dirt. She almost looks like she's going to get hurt. He's about to run out, but realizes he can't. He just has to stay back, and so she gets off, and they brush her off, and then she gets to go play again. And the whole time, he's got tears coming down his face because he recalls what it was like before. A few years before that, he had a wife, and his little girl was about 2. And he had his own little farm, and he had his own home, and he got to be with his family. And there was kind of like this regular routine that kind of went on every day. They wake up in the morning, they have breakfast together, he plays with his daughter, they hang out, and then he goes out and works the field. And at the end of his work time, he's in the barn, and he would wash up, and she would come running. She would come running, the barn doors would be open, she'd just come flying. She'd make a right, because you have to make a right to where the washroom's at. She makes this right, and as she's running, as you know, most 2-year-olds, they're not super steady. They seem to kind of go back and forth, and so she'd hit a wall, and she'd hit another wall, and go right for Dad, and Dad would turn around, throw out his hands, pick her up, and throw her up. They'd wrestle around for a little bit, and then they'd walk in the house for dinner. And every day, that was the same routine, over and over and over, until that day came. It was a normal day. All this stuff was normal, except for this one thing. As he's washing his hands, all of a sudden, he notices that the water turns red. Not knowing why, what's going on, not knowing why. He hears his daughter coming. For some reason, also mom came at the exact same time. And as the daughter comes around and mom's following her, running right after, he notices that there's blood now on his shirt, just kind of little spots of it here and there. As the mom comes around, she looks at his face and knows something is wrong, looks at what's going on in his shirt, and his hands are a little bit bloody, so she grabs her daughter, pulls her back. And they stare at each other. And the husband's looking at his wife, and the dad's looking at his daughter, and he knows what it is. See, there's leprosy in that time, and leprosy is this disease that pretty much your body just eats away itself, kind of like limbs. People, their noses would fall off, their fingertips all of a sudden they would decay down to nothing. And if you had this disease, you're considered unclean, and if you have this disease, you're set aside, and you live in this colony with other people that have leprosy. You can't be with people. Quote unquote. And for anyone to come up and touch a person that has leprosy, they're to be considered unclean. They're to be separated from the rest of society for a time. And he knew what this meant. He knew that he had to leave. And he knew that he had to move. And he knew that he would never hold his girl again. The daughter didn't get to hug. The wife didn't get to hug. They didn't get to say anything except goodbye. And he walked off, and now we are 3 years later. And you look at Matthew chapter 8, and you say, it doesn't say that in the passage. You're right. But it's a good story, isn't it? It doesn't say that, but could it have been that? Could this be a person who is at his last wits' end? Because look what happens. When he came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. This guy is at his last-ditch effort. This guy is at his wits' end because he knows he's heard about Jesus. He's heard that this Jesus guy, he can do these miracles. And maybe it just happened exactly the way I just threw a story at you. Maybe all he can think about is, I want to hold my daughter. I want to be with my wife. I want to go home. This stinks. And so there's Jesus, and he's walking down, and his disciples are with him. It's after the It's after the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew's 5-7, and they're coming down, and this large crowd is following Jesus. And it was known in that day that as rabbis or teachers, as they walked along, they would teach along the way. And so maybe Jesus is teaching, and people are trying to get in front to listen and get as close as they can to hear what it is that he's saying. So this person, this man with leprosy, makes his way into the crowd to go right before Jesus and kneel before him. He doesn't beg. He doesn't plead. He makes a statement of faith. He says, "Lord, if you were willing, you can make me clean." He's just so humble before Jesus. It's kind of like, this is all I got. I am begging you, but I'm really not begging. I'm just proclaiming. I believe this to be true. If you're willing, you can make me clean. But it all comes in, like, it comes down to that point, if you're willing. If you want to, I know you can do this. Have you ever been to that point with God where you've begged or pleaded? You just begged or pleaded with God, please, 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 and then tried to convince him, if he doesn't want to change his mind. If I pray enough for this, I'll change his mind. If I say this enough, I'll change his mind. Or do you just stop and go, okay, God, I know you have a plan. I know you have a purpose. I know you know what you're doing, and so I'm going to stop pleading and just say, if you're willing, you can do this. And leave it at that. That's all he does. It's one statement. Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. It says that he's knelt before him. So he's not even looking at him. He's just humbled before him. And look what happens next. Jesus reached out his hand and what? What did he do? He touched him. Oh no. Jesus is now what? Unclean. He didn't heal him first. It says that Jesus reached out, touched the man, and says, I'm willing to be clean. He touched him while he was dirty. Touched him while he was dirty. So Jesus made himself unclean. Did he make a mistake? He'd sit there and go, oh, all right, you're clean. Darn it, I'm not. And then walk away. I got to be separate. You're clean. Go away. Was he upset? Or did Jesus really know the true need that this person had? Because if no one wants to touch him, for however many years this is, if it was 3 or 33, I have no clue. But if no one wants to touch him, in fact, if a person has leprosy, and say they're walking down the street and there's quote-unquote clean people around, then he would have to walk down the street, put his or her hand over his or her mouth, and point to the people coming toward him and just scream out, unclean, so that people could get away from him. Can you imagine everyone getting out of their way so they don't bump into you, they don't touch you? I'm a touchy guy, man. I like high-fiving and handshaking and just hugging. I mean, to think that for years no one would want to do that. Everyone, I look around at everyone else and they're doing it, but it's just me to stay away. What do you think the real need was that this man had? Healing, yeah, that's what he wanted, and I would say he needed it because it's painful. But what was a deeper need? What do you think he needed? Bring it back. New relationships, yeah. I agree with that. What else? He needed to be touched. He needed to be touched. He needed to know that someone gave a rip. And Jesus knew it. And he touches him while he's dirty. Would Jesus separate himself from society like the law said? Would Jesus say, I've got to separate myself? Absolutely. It wasn't a man-made thing. That was a God thing. And God knew what he was doing when he set up certain laws. We say, well, I don't understand why I would do that. Well, with modern medicine, we have certain things that we do to cure diseases or so that we don't get diseases. And so God knew that those modern miracles of science weren't there yet, and so I've got to make sure they do this. And they take these steps and do this. And so Jesus would. And I look at that passage, and then I was only going to do that, and I felt like God put my heart, we're going through the whole chapter, and so we're going to be here till Tuesday, and we're just going to keep going. And you get the man, I mean, they go from there. When Jesus said, he goes into Capernaum, and there's this centurion. And we look at the centurion, and we go, well, what is that? Anybody know what a centurion is? What's a centurion? What is that? Yeah, he's like a captain in the army. So he's got 100 soldiers that are under him. This guy is well respected. He's probably very wealthy. He's in charge. He doesn't really just go off of his emotion. If he's in a battle, instead of just running to every single thing, he stands his ground, and if he has to die at his post, he will. He will not just flee off like most of his other soldiers will do. So he's the guy. And he has this relationship with his servant. He just adores this specific servant who is so sick they're about to die. And in Matthew it says that the centurion went to Jesus, but in Luke it says that he sent Jewish elders to Jesus and then sent friends to him. And so which one is it? Is there a problem with the Bible? Are these two different accounts? No, I think it's this. I think he sends these Jewish elders as representatives of himself. And so he goes to Jesus through the Jewish elders. He goes to Jesus through his friends. Does that make sense? No? Kind of? Well, that's what happens. So he sends the Jewish leaders. They go off and they say this. In the book of Luke, it says that they say this. This man deserves that you do this. And here's the reasons. One, he loves our nation. And two, he built our synagogue. He loves Israel. You know, the people that you've set aside, the chosen people, he loves them. He loves this nation. And he built our church. Don't we kind of do the same thing today? They're a great patriot, God, and they give a lot to the church. So they don't deserve this. Make sure they get a lot in return. Come on. He deserves this. And so Jesus agrees. He starts going to the guy's house. The centurion hears that he's coming, so the centurion sends his friends now and says, say this to him. Say this to him. I'm not even worthy for you to come into my home. I'm not even worthy of that. For in that day, for a Jewish person to go into a Gentile's home, that Jewish person would be considered unclean. Just to go into a person's house. And well, what's a Gentile? If you're a Gentile, raise your hand. Every single one of your Gentiles, because you're not 100% Jewish. So, obviously. You guys are, you're a Gentile, I'm a Gentile. Just for a Jewish person to come into your house in that day, they'd be considered unclean, so they never went in your house. And he knew the law. He knew what it said. He's a religious man. The centurion wasn't just this guy and just said, come and do what I tell you to do. He was a religious man. He said, I'm not worthy. You can't come in my house. I know what the law says. So just say the word. Just say the word from where you're at, and my servant will be healed. I understand authority. I mean, I tell this soldier, go do this, and they go. And I say, this one, go do that, and they go do that. And do you see what Jesus says? Verse 10. When Jesus heard this, he was what? Astonished? Wait, doesn't Jesus know everything? So how can someone who knows everything ever get astonished? How many of you have ever seen a movie more than once? Like what? Give me a movie that you've seen that you love more than, like you've seen it more than once. Rush Hour 2, okay? Why are y'all laughing? I'm just kidding. I'm joking. What else? I mean, give me another one. I do like, huh?
Face Off.
All these different movies. You've seen it more than once. Now, the first time you see something, it's like it's one of those thrillers, and you're jumping, and you're screaming. I mean, not me, because I'm strong. But maybe you're freaking out a little bit, because you're not sure how it's going to end. You're just kind of tense. Are you still as tense the second time? You're sitting there the second time going, I knew that was going to happen, but can you still do the same thing? I don't understand this. If you get one of those movies that you kind of cry, none of guys, we don't cry. Not movies. We just have an itch in our eye and sweat coming down our face. It's not tears, it's sweat. But ladies, I know you kind of cry in some of those. Do you cry as hard the second time? And some, I've asked this question a lot, and a lot of girls go, absolutely, I still cry. And I don't get it. You know what's going to happen. You've already seen it the first time. You freaked out that time. Why on the second, third, 265th time are you still crying just as hard? It's just so touching. You don't get it. You're a boy. You're right. It doesn't make sense to me. So you look at this and it says that Jesus was astonished. If Jesus knows everything, how could he be astonished? I don't know. But he was. And that's the cool thing. Maybe another way to word it is that Jesus was astonished or Jesus was impressed. Do you think that Jesus is ever impressed with you or with what you do? Or you just picture him this really angry grandpa. You're just such a slacker.
You're such a slacker. Come on, you need to know how horrible you are. You're horrible. You're horrible. You're horrible. Is that the God that you think that you worship? Because you realize it's not even biblical? Do you realize you make God happy? He's happy with you. Hold on, when I screw up, you're his kid. He's not giving up on you. Yeah, he might have to discipline. But he doesn't sit there and ever regret you. Ever. I can impress God. There's certain times on whatever I'm doing, if I'm just doing it for him, he's like, that's what I'm talking about. Look, I'm so impressed with what he's done. Even if he knows everything? Absolutely. Because I can touch the heart of my Father. I can touch him. I can do things that just make him just so thankful that I would do that for him. And if you miss that, then the only reason you're a Christian is because you're afraid of hell. And that is the worst reason to love God. I love you because I don't want to go to hell. Doesn't that just sound like a great relationship? Isn't that just a fun, loving, rejoice-filled, celebratory relationship? I love you because I have to, because if I don't, I have to go to hell. What a great, fun relationship that is. It's not even right. It's not how it's supposed to be. Jesus is astonished. What's he astonished with? This is what he says. I tell you the truth. I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. I'm looking at this Gentile Roman captain and comparing him to all the religious people that I've seen even in Israel. Oh, his faith way outweighs everybody else's. He's saying, even in Israel, even those elders that came, everyone that's standing around me, I've never seen faith like this guy's. And I ask you, is your faith impressive? Because he doesn't say that about everybody. He didn't say that about the man with leprosy. But do I think he was impressed?
No.
But when we just kind of go through life, I'm not really do too much, I don't want to take too many risks, what will people think? Do you think he just goes, wow, their faith is awesome. They don't do anything for me. They're great. They're lazy. They're not excited. I'm not saying excitement. Excitement doesn't look like this. Excitement is not us jumping around 24/7. Because I can't. I would just get so tired after, I don't know, a minute and a half. I just can't do it that long. But I know I have this purpose. I know I have this relationship which just drives me crazy. And it also means that I can rest in God. My time with God today, this morning, you know what it was? I said, okay, I'm going to have an extended time with God because I'm going to go preach, and if I want success, then I have to coerce God and convince him that I'm supposed to do great things, and so he'll show up. So I better do this really long time so that he's happy and then good things happen. It's a horrible mindset. So then it changed, and I get this phone call, and it's the pastor's wife from your church saying, why don't you go ahead and get breakfast in the hotel? And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I go down, and I get breakfast, and I open my Bible, and I think I read three verses, finished my breakfast, and got in the car. That's all you did? Yeah. And I sat, and I listened to people praying, and languages, I don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm totally lost on what's going on. So what do I do? Just sit there and go, this is stupid. No. You know a cool thing? I know that the people who were praying to Jesus, and it freaked me out that Jesus understood it. He got it. It's not like he's going, oh, looking through, what's that? He got it, man. It's like his first language. And I was so touched, and I'm getting prayed for, and my wife's getting prayed for, and I'm listening to this message. And you say, well, what about your quiet time? Get away from the concept or the definition of a quiet time, because then it just puts God back in your box. 20 minutes here, 20 minutes here, 20 minutes here, rather than so far today, I've spent all day with him. I spent time with God eating cantaloupe and an omelet. And I read some verses, and I jumped in the car, and I checked out the baseball scores, and I hung with God all day so far. What about you? Just when you got here? Just when you've prayed? I want the kind of life that impresses him and leads him to the point where he goes, I have never seen anything like this before, ever. I want that. Don't you? Or you just went, nah. I think the worst thing you'd ever hear God say, after you do something for him and you look and go, hey, what'd you think for him to go? Eh, he's all right. Pretty good. I want to hear pretty good. I definitely don't want him to go, eh, eh. I don't like eh. I want him to go, dang. Well, that's what I want. Is that what you want? So let's just say, oh, I just like my lazy life. I like to just sit, and me and Xbox, we got a sweet relationship, and we like to hang out, and he's always showing me stories, and I'm telling him what to do. And, I mean, you really think the Xbox has this great relationship? How boring are you becoming? Get out. Meet a person. Not on MySpace. Do something. Be signs on the other side of a computer screen, and go meet somebody. And see if God's going to use you in a great way. You say, are you saying that God doesn't use MySpace? If he does, it's only by the grace of God. I just got off that thing. You think it's relationship, it's friendship with people you've never met? Hi, we're best buddies. I have 650,000 friends in my buddy list. 650? Must be expensive for birthday cards. That's what you've turned it into. If all you do is you just sit on the other side of that screen or sit with that controller, you're missing out what God's wanting to do. He wants you involved in the lives of others. Why? How do I know? Love God, love others. How do I know? I mean, what's the greatest commandment? Love God with everything. Love your neighbors, yourself. That's it. But if it's all about you, you're missing it. The centurion came to Jesus in a crisis of faith. What was the crisis of faith? What was he all worried about? Well, the centurion, what was his request? Was that? Heal my servant. He's going through this tough time. How many of you say, I want more faith? Be careful. How many say, I want more faith? Raise your hand. God, increase my faith. Welcome to trouble. Welcome to trials. Welcome to testing, because that's how your faith grows. You ever notice your faith doesn't grow when it's all comfy? Oh, this is great. I need more faith to just sit around and go through nothing. God, thanks for increasing my faith. Do you realize that's not how it comes? Do you realize that the testing of your faith means he has to test your faith? Test it. Tests are never fun. If you like a test, wow, you're amazing. But I don't know a lot of people that like it. So when you say, God, I want more faith, increase my faith, then you need to prepare yourself that he's going to check it. And here with the centurion, he checks it. And the centurion, man, he passed with flying colors. And you go from the centurion, and the next part is that Jesus just goes around and starts healing everybody. Just starts touching and healing, and people are getting healed left and right. And then he gets to chapter 8, verse 18. He says, when Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher-in-law came to him and said, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. And Jesus replied, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Another disciple said to him, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. And Jesus said, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. Ouch. That kind of puts that whole nice Jesus aside, huh? Anybody remember Mr. Rogers? Anybody? Is he kind of old? You ever notice we try to turn Jesus into him? He's just coming in. Beautiful day in the neighborhood. Beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Changing his shoes. Putting on a sweater. And you ever realize we would never crucify Mr. Rogers? For those who are older, remember Captain Kangaroo? You never crucified Captain Kangaroo. But Jesus was crucified. Why? It wasn't because he walked around being nice. I heard a statement a professor gave me once, and I've never forgotten it. Jesus is not always nice, but he is always good. He's always good. He's not always nice. He doesn't always sugarcoat it so we feel great. But he's always good, and we can trust the things he says. And so on that one, I don't know what was going on. It could have been that I've read different things, but it could have been Jesus saying to the guy, you know what? I already know what's going on. I know your dad's not really dead. He might not even be close to being dead, but you're just kind of waiting for him to die to get your inheritance, and then you're going to come with me. So do me a favor. Don't do that. Realize it's me first, completely. It's the cost of following Jesus. That Jesus is primary, number one, no matter what. All these people, man, they're so excited. I want to follow this guy. Why would they all be so excited to want to follow him wherever he goes? What do you think? What's been happening? So far in the passage, what's been happening? What? Miracles. Wouldn't you be around a guy that can heal people? We just kind of walk up, pow, 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 pow. They're all just getting up, whoa, boom, 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 boom. Just, people just touching, they're walking away. People that can't speak, they're walking away just screaming and yelling and praising God. Jumping and leaping. Okay, all these different things are happening. Don't you want to be with that guy? Don't you be their chum and their buddy? Don't you be their right-hand person? Oh, I want to be with you, Jesus. Because if I'm with you, then everyone else sees me. See why they all want to be with Jesus right now? And Jesus has to come back around and say, realize this, guys. I don't have a place to lay my head. I don't have a home of my own. It's not about glamour. It's not about glitz. Realize it costs you something. What does it cost you? He says, if anyone wants to be found worthy to be my disciple, they must what? Deny themselves. Pick up their what? Their cross, how often? Daily, Book of Luke tells us. And follow me. Cross. And we go, okay, I'll do that. I'll do that. What was a cross in that day? Was that like jewelry? Come on, guys, come get your crosses. Selling crosses. I mean, is that what people, like, they everyone just bought it? Like, every jewelry guy had a cross you could buy. There's 1,400 different colors. I like that one. That one's a nice one. That one's gold, but got diamonds. That one's, I want silver. Platinum, that's what I want. Is that how it was? Because what happened with a cross back in that day? People hung on them. People died on them. I mean, Jesus, the fact that Jesus died in a few hours was unheard of. People would hang on a cross for weeks. They would just hang there. They'd be alive until they suffocated to death. And Jesus says, pick up your cross. And that's what comes to their mind. It's kind of like if Jesus were today, he'd say, okay, if you want to die yourself, pick up your electric chair and follow me. And they go, what? Doesn't make sense. It's like, you know what, all that stuff, then, you know, the shame or, you know what, death could come. Whatever it is, like the worst thing, if you could think of the worst thing, he says, you pick it up and you come with me. It will cost you everything. And how often do you pick it up? Daily. You ever been to a camp where it's like Friday night, if it's a weekend thing, like this, but you know, if it's just a youth camp, have you gone to a youth camp just where it's a bunch of high schoolers or junior highers, you know that? And say if it's a weekend, it's usually like Friday you're getting to know each other and you get a message, and then Saturday morning you get a little more serious message, and then Saturday night it's cry fest. You ever had that? Don't know why you're crying, you're just freaking out. And so we plan everything around Saturday night because that's when God shows up. And don't get me wrong, I do believe it happens. I do believe God does great things like that. But have you ever had someone come up and tell you, this is what it's going to cost you to follow Jesus? It will cost you everything. Because too often the gospel is this: pray the prayer and you get heaven. That's the gospel. Rather than, I've offended God. And there is a just God who will punish my sin. But Jesus took my place so that I could be forgiven and have a relationship with God. And for those who do not accept Christ, they must still pay for their sin. Oh, that's a little different. But how many of you've accepted Christ, but you go to those camps and you make this one-time recommitment? You heard that? Someone says, how many of you want to recommit to Christ? And you're like, I do. I stand up again once a year. Recommit. Do you realize that that's not even what we should be doing? Do you realize that our recommitment to Christ should happen every single day? We should wake up and just, God, I give you my life again. Everything. Today I want it to be about you. Whatever you want, I want it about you. Every day we should be doing that. Not just once a year at a retreat on a Saturday night when I was crying. It should be a daily commitment, a daily thing. And then you jump from that. Remember, his disciples have been following around. Those 12 guys, they've been going with him. They're like, oh, this is great. Don't think that their motives are pure. Please don't think, oh my gosh, they all just want to follow Jesus. They want to give up their lives, take up their cross, and go. I say most of them are pretty selfish, and they're thinking, we are the top 12. We're the cabinet. We're his cabinet. And when he overthrows Rome and he takes over, we're going to be the top guys. That's what they're thinking. And then they hit a storm. Jesus gets them in a boat. He says, let's go across. The storm comes. And it's just going, I mean, water's just coming into the boat. And if you've ever been on a boat, water outside the boat, great. Water inside the boat, not so good. You don't want water in the boat, ever. You hear water's just going over, and the disciples are freaking out. And a couple of them are fishermen, and they're freaking out. And does anybody know what Jesus is doing? Look at the passage. He's sleeping. How the heck do you sleep in something like that? You must be really tired. If you're just conked out in the middle of a storm while water's landing on you. Has anyone ever had someone wake them up with water in their face? Just like pour something? No, never? Try it. It's so fun to... It's not fun to receive it, but it's fun to do it. I remember I did that at an all-nighter once because these kids wouldn't help. They wouldn't get up to help me clean up the stuff. And first of all-nighters, I don't do those anymore. But we were doing it that night. And she's a visitor. I probably shouldn't have done it because she got a little mad. She's laying there. I'm pulling the sleeping bag away, trying to get her to wake up, and she's not waking up. So I said, you know what? Either you wake up now, or I'm just going to have to make sure you get up. She's like, ah. So I stick this cup right on her head. Jumps up, looks at me. Up. I never saw her again. She didn't come back, so that kind of backfired. Jesus is, he's asleep. He's asleep on the boat. Have you ever had someone tell you, you know what, you got God. I mean, he's right with you. And so since he's right with you, the fact that you're afraid doesn't mean you trust him. Ever had anybody tell you that or feel like that? Maybe no one's told you, but anybody felt like that? God, I don't trust. I'm scared right now. I feel like I don't trust. I know you're close, but just a couple of you. Were the disciples afraid? I mean, they come right up to Jesus and says, don't you care if we drown? What a way to wake up. Don't you care if we drown? Not right now. Get away from me. I'll throw you in the lake myself. Is Jesus in the boat with them? Are they afraid? Does it ever feel... to you, do you ever feel like maybe God fell asleep on you? You ever hit the storm and feel like God forgot? And that God's asleep? And that all the efforts you're doing, nothing's changing? You ever feel like that? Welcome to being with Jesus. Was he away? No. Did he jump up at the first sight of the storm? Nope. But do you ever feel like he just fell asleep on you? He forgot about you? I bet these disciples at each one of these stations where Jesus is healing the man with leprosy, he's speaking healing to the servant of the centurion, and then they're watching Jesus heal all these people all around. They hear what he says to the people saying, okay, I don't have a place to live. Go let the dead bury their own dead. And they're like, yeah, we're totally for that. Until they hit their own storm and you see what happens. And where does their faith go? It's gone. See, when other people go through things, we can be either very encouraging or we can just turn into jerks. We don't become sympathetic. We don't try to sympathize with them. We just go, well, that's your thing. Trust God and I'm going to go have lunch. Just trust God. Just God. Just trust God. Is it good advice? Absolutely. But when it's done out of a heart that doesn't give a rip, you might as well just keep your mouth shut. Because it's not encouraging anybody. Or this one. This is the verse that we seem to throw at each other. A person loses someone. You say, you know what? God works all things together for good for those who love him and call according to his purpose. Is it true? Yeah. Do I want to hear that at that moment? No. Do you think a non-believer wants to hear that? I mean, it's one thing for a Christian to hear. If they're mature in Christ and you give them that verse, that might encourage them. But for a person who doesn't know the Lord and they lost someone and you walk up and say, you know, God works things all together for good for those who love him and call according to his purpose. Do you think they're going to say, thanks? Man, I feel good. Thanks for letting me know that God wanted my friend to die. That's what you're saying. It's this journey of faith that I see. I've never preached it like this. I've always done one part. But it's this journey of faith. You see a guy with leprosy, has nothing left, goes straight to Jesus. Jesus takes care of it. Centurion sends people, doesn't go worried to go to Jesus. He has this humble attitude while these elders of the Jewish people had this very arrogant attitude. He deserves this. You should do this. How do you pray? When you go before Jesus and say, God, I don't deserve this. But if you're willing, you can... Or, Jesus, I'm one of your kids. And so I demand that you... See the difference? Jesus goes around and heals many, and then tons of people want to follow him, and then he tells the cost, and people start turning away little by little. I will never tell you, nor will I ever preach it, because I don't see it in Scripture. Accept Christ, and you get the perfect life. Perfect life, perfect wife, perfect house, perfect picket fence, perfect cars, perfect kids, perfect situation, perfect circumstances, perfect, perfect, perfect. In fact, he says it gets harder, because now you got to battle sin. Before Christ, you don't have to battle sin. You just get to live in it. You don't even know. He's like, woohoo! Now you gotta battle with it. But it is absolutely, completely worth it. Some say, I don't see it. I've been reading my Bible, praying forever. I'm not talking about reading your Bible or praying. I'm talking, are you humbly walking with God? Are you walking with Him? For those, I think most of you guys were up there when you all prayed for me and my family, weren't you? I'm standing up there, and it's being explained, and I'm not saying this was God or not God. I just like, it helps when I have pictures. You know, if you have a story, I relate better with stories or pictures than I do just information. And I felt like I get to see this as you guys are praying. I just saw these two big hands with my family in the middle of it. And then I saw these two hands just kind of pulling us closer. That's what I got to be. That's what I got to see. Oh, I loved it. I just sit there going, keep praying. This is a great little thing I'm watching. And that's the kind of stuff that I sit there and go, yeah. To humbly walk with God doesn't mean I'm just spending my whole day with my nose in the book reading so I can answer trivia questions when I get to heaven. Jeopardy. What is the Red Sea? What is the empty tomb? What is 3 days later? Oh, champion. To act justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with my God, that's what God requires of me. To walk with Him. I was chatting online with a college student I've had in the past in my ministry, and she reminded me of something. I remember I went to this park, and I'll close with this because I know it's time for lunch. And you're like, oh, it is? I'm not going to listen. No, listen. I'll close with this. So I like to go to parks by myself to get alone with God, or just to take a walk, or to find a bench to read, or listen, or whatever. And so I've got my notebook, and I've got my Bible, and I go to the table, my same place, same time, and I'm writing and reading and getting into it, and the Bible's all marked up. I'm loving it. And I felt like God said this, Brian, put your Bible away. Oh, but this is quiet time, God. Put your Bible away. Let's go for a walk. And so I go for a walk, and I'm going, where are we going? And all of a sudden, I see these swings. And I get motion sickness, even on a swing. It's weird. I don't know how that happened, but it happened. I don't get nervous sickness, but on a swing. But I felt like God said, hey, go swing. I'm like, no. You know how stupid I would look? I think this is, I may have been like 28, 29 at the time, a few years ago. I'm 32 in case you want to. It's like three or four years ago. I felt like he said, Brian, get on the swing. And I'm like, how many 28-year-olds do you see at the park all by themselves swinging? I mean, I understand you got a kid with you and you're swinging with the kid and having fun, but there's no one around. It's not like I'm with my family. It's just like, go swing. I'm like, no, I'm not getting on the swing. That would look so stupid. And he kept saying, just get on the swing. Brian, get on the swing. He said, get on the swing. I just sit there. He's like, swing. Oh! So I finally get going. I'm getting a little motion sickness, but I'm doing it. And he showed me. God reminded me, just be a kid. Don't worry about all this stuff. Just be a kid. I'm like, but I'm swinging. I'm not doing like hardcore Jesus work right now. And you're reminding me. You need to learn to play with God as much as you pray to Him. What it did, it opened my eyes to I can swing in worship to God as much as I can spend time in His Word or pray or go to a church service. My playing with my boys at home is as much worship as if I sing songs to Him. Because it pleases Him when I do that for Him. Does that make sense? When I love my wife, that pleases God, therefore it's worship to God. And therefore I'm worshiping Him constantly. So today, maybe some of you need to go swing.
We're at college campus. They don't have swings.
That's the worst thing. They should have swings here. They should have like the huge, heavy-duty, huge, massive swings for the big people who just go crazy. I challenge you, next time you're at a park, jump on the swing and try to picture what God's doing. Because what I think God was doing while I was doing it, I think He was swinging with me. Or giving me a push. That's my relationship with God.
Yes, I never saw a swing in the Bible. Never saw a swing mentioned in the Holy Word.
Really? You're right. But I can guarantee you I'm having a whole lot more fun with God than you are. I don't think He wants us to just live this life where we are constantly reminded that we are unworthy. I think we know that. And I think we should continually go to Him and say, I am unworthy. But also go to Him and realize that we are beyond value. See the difference? I am beyond value to my God. How do I know that? Because He gave His Son the ultimate price for me. If it was up to me and I had to give up Tyler, my firstborn, there's no way. Every single person would burn in hell. I wouldn't give up my kid. Couldn't do it. And to think what He paid? Are you beyond value? Oh yeah. Are you worthy of it? Nope. But we don't keep living in that. I cannot believe that my God likes me that much. And that He loves me that much. I can't believe it. So I challenge you to go out. Have impressive enough faith to go out and swing. Maybe that's the next thing, the best thing you can do today, to worship God. Just maybe. Or be bitter the rest of your life and just stick your face in a book. I don't know. Pick. Which one do you think? Jesus, as we go eat, thanks for food. Thanks for giving it to us. May we learn to swing and enjoy You, I pray in Your name. Everyone says, amen. Amen. Thanks, guys.